This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Calling Grass Nation, we are conducting an audience survey at gum.fm/touchgrass. And we want to hear from you so that we can keep making content you love.
You know this. We know this. There are ads on our podcast. Mm-hmm. We want to improve that experience. But in order to do so, we need to know a little bit more about you, our audience. This survey is quick, easy, and a free way to support this podcast. It'll take 2 minutes and you'll be helping us out so much by doing it.
Yes, so go to gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our audience survey. That's gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our survey. Thank you for using your precious time online to help us with our podcast.
We love you.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart Family Cards. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or whether you should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart, and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
You got mail.
Hello, I'm Millie Tamara.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Elise and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this podcast, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can literally do anything else with your time.
Anything else. But if you like what you hear today and you want to hear more, if what you want to do more with your time is hear us,
yes,
you can go to the Go Touch Grass Patreon, which is already set up. We've got test episodes, mini trending topics, a weekly newsletter, and our spinoff series, Search History, where we go back and break down a viral discourse from the past.
And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review. We love reviews, and we need more of them. We are insatiable.
Yeah.
Please give us
more reviews. Our guest this week is writer, actor, content creator, Brooklyn-based comedian, and internet's very gay dad, Jake Cornell.
Hi.
Do you vibe with that description of yourself?
Yeah, I think I vibe with that. Yeah. Overall, I think I've never called myself a content creator. I feel like that sends a chill down my spine.
I know.
Yeah.
Like,
it's tough.
Do you know what I mean? But I do. But I think all the other words work.
I think that I just like heard this whole thing about like the difference between a content creator and an influencer. And you are a content creator, but like, you're more than a content creator, you know?
Thank you.
You're not a content creator.
Let me be clear. I would like to be neither of those things. Yeah. Let me be crystal clear.
But, for our listeners.
Absolutely.
How would you describe the content that you do create?
I'm a comedian and I make videos online that I think the easiest way to describe them is I kind of do like observational comedy while walking around Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like stand up into my headphones a little bit is like the easiest way to. And then sometimes I do characters. I used to do more characters. Now I'll throw in a character every once in a while, but it's a mix of those two things.
I feel like it's also just a little bit too like, you do talk about like lifestyle. There's some lifestyle stuff.
Yeah.
About like how to make cocktails and stuff. And then
I do the cocktail videos every once in a while. I need to do more of those.
And then, like, you do talk about, like, New York-specific things. So I was just, you're kind of everyone's hot, gay Brooklyn friend.
Thank you. That's kind of, like, my thing, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that parasocial relationship with someone specifically who's, like, hot, gay in Brooklyn.
Totally. I love that.
I feel like recently, when I've seen your videos, you've always been speaking to something that I, like, literally just experienced. Like, you just posted one about sunscreen getting in your eye, and I've been having such a horrible sunscreen in the eye day. And I've really found that.
And it's a full day. Once it happens, until you shower, you're done. Yeah.
And now is the time where I will mention, which I mention often on the podcast, that I do have chronic incurable dry eye. And so when sunscreen...
Is that the official diagnosis?
Yeah, chronic incurable dry eye.
They call it chronic incurable. It's like, okay, well, cure it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we can't... I'm on the forums.
Yeah.
I'm in the dry eye Reddit. So are you
Visine-ing like at all times?
She had some... What is it? There were some $600 eye drops.
Yes, but I was able to... Now they're less expensive, but there are... The eye drop markup is absolutely outrageous. Wild. It's like an insulin level markup for eye drops. It's unbelievable. But what I was going to say is that with sunscreen in the eye on top of a chronic incurable dry eye is it's a horrible
situation.
Tangent from the insulin thing. Famously in Millie's lore, matched with Martin Scorsese on OK Cupid, and we did chat. And we were a 70% match, and that is why we started therapy.
You got to claim that 30% that wasn't a match. Scary.
That is so scary.
Did you know he was Martin Shkreli matched?
Yes.
So you swiped right for like the lols?
It's like we had, I don't even know like.
How OK Cupid works.
I forgot how, because it was like.
OK Cupid maybe didn't have like a match component. It
wasn't like swipe right, swipe left. It was like you saw everyone in your area and all this stuff, and like
and what your
you
match
can accept.
Was.
You can accept.
You could mess. I think you could just cold message people and be like, "What's up, Millie?" Yeah, I think so.
I messaged. So we like popped. He popped up in my feed. I messaged him and I'm like, "Is this real?" Or like he had matched or something liked. And then I'm like, "Is this real?" And then he writes back, "Yes?" Question mark.
Oh my god.
Wow.
So that's in Millie's lore. This was in his peak era, like pre-jail, post Wu-Tang. Because
Martin Scorsese bought PrEP, right? Is it or he bought?
He bought insulin.
He bought a lot of shit. Like
he just bought medical things and was like, "I'm gonna make these expensive."
And so charge like fucking 80%, 100%, 200%.
Yeah, markup. He was like evil pharma bro, is what everyone called him. And then wasn't there an article like years later about a woman who was like writing an article about him and then fell in love with him
and left her family and unfroze her eggs and all
she
this
fell
shit,
in love with Martin Scorsese.
Or froze her eggs for him. Yeah. And then when it came out,
could have been
dumped, She dumped him. Or he dumped her. He dumped her after it came out.
Could have been Millie.
Could have been me. Okay. Fuck. Jake, second question. We've been friends for a very long time.
Yeah, I've known you guys a long ass time.
But in preparation for the pod, I Googled you.
Oh, fuck.
And found out that there's another Jake Cornell.
I know, the musician.
With the same spelling and everything, who's a YouTube singer.
Yeah.
What is your relationship with the other Jake Cornell? Are you sworn enemies? Have you interacted online? What's the vibe?
So what's funny is that we've never interacted online. He has way more TikTok followers than me. Like he's like in the millions.
Yeah, I know.
He's younger than me. He's like, I think he's probably like, I don't think he's
illegal.
I think he's like 20.
that should be outlawed. Illegal.
And I did like, I've watched his videos a few times and he does this, like video series where he would like, I think they're staged, but like, it was like, he'd be getting in the car and like his friend would be filming and in the passenger seat and would kind of like almost like flash mob surprise him with a song he had to sing. So it'd be like he'd get in the car and it'd be like here, like play, like sing She Will Be Found by Maroon 5, and then they would turn on the radio and that would be playing and then he would like sing along very quickly to it and it would like sound amazing because he's a good singer. Mm-hmm. Like, so I have watched a bunch of his videos at time, but what's funny is neither of us have the handle Jake Cornell. I'm Jake W. Cornell. And then he's, I think, Jake E. Cornell.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I think this is no longer the case. But, like, probably, like, 5 or 6 years ago, there was the person who had the handle Jake Cornell was, like, a small boy. Like, a 12-year-old boy.
Wow.
And that boy had, like, 400 followers, 200 of whom were, like, my friends who had followed him on accident.
Yeah.
Like, I very clearly remember, like, Chris Burns followed this little boy. And I was, like, so many people we know followed him. And, I wonder if I can pull up right now because every once in a while I'll check. Like, at one point, like, my dad's ex-wife, who's not my mom, like, his other ex-wife followed her.
Wow.
It was so funny. Like, this little boy never posted. And I was, like, I think we scared him off the
internet. This little boy, like, all of these random adults are following me.
Yes,
and
like,
I don't
full.
Know.
Holy.
I'm like, who are these?
It's this boy. Wait, it's this boy who, like, and here's the thing. I could see how you could think like, I could see how you could think, like, this is a younger version of me. But, like, okay, he only has
Okay, he's a very little boy.
Okay, he has 60 followers, 28 mutuals. I have 28 mutuals.
Oh, my God.
Mutuals
with this. Oh, my God.
Like,
oh, my God.
And you can tell, it's, like, a lot of people we know. Like,
let me see. Like, call him out.
Wait, name, this is names. Really, no, really, really funny. I mean, we have called him out. It's Jake Cornell.
Oh, yeah, wait. Oh, no. Everyone knows his handle.
Oh, wow. No, but I mean, like,
but we leave so, this I feel bad. Like, and this kid never used this as account. And I have to think it's because all of small. These. Well, granted, he's not that small anymore because this has been the case for, like, at this point, 7 years.
So the account's been, like, dormant for a long time.
I think the account's dormant because his parents probably were like, why are people in their 20s in New York City following you fervently on the internet?
What's going on? Sick, guys. I mean, that's so unfortunate.
Funny. Yeah, that's so funny.
Well, God bless. One day you can get the handle, or one day he feels comfortable returning to Instagram.
He actually doesn't have Jake Cornell anymore. This person has Jake Cornell now. Who's another random person.
What's up with these Jake Cornells?
Boy, we'll say,
knock it off.
I know.
Yeah, Jake Cornells, knock it off.
My mom claims that she wanted me to have, like, it was, like, important to her that I had an original name. And she was like, Jake was not a popular name when I named you that. But then from 92, the year I was born, until I think, like, I'm not joking, like, 01, 03, like, somewhere in there, Jake was the number one name in America.
Wow.
For, like, that entire time. Like, Jake is so common.
Wow. Yeah. You never know.
The tides turn.
You never know.
It's Aiden.
Yes.
Kind of names. Jaden, Aiden, Caden.
Oh, Brayden. Yeah.
Brayden.
So I watched this TikTok called The Rise and Fall of Jennifer. And the point of it was basically that the name Jennifer skyrocketed to popularity so much in the early to, like, late 80s, early 90s that then now it has fallen off precipitously and, like, no one is named Jennifer anymore. All Jennifers exist in that time period. And then it was so popular that now there are no Jennifers.
Yeah, that's kind of the same in Japan with names that end with Ko. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell how old somebody is based on, like,
oh, interesting.
Like, Emiko, Michiko, like, Ko, like, ending the name with Ko, which translates to child, like, is just a signifier of, like, something that was just very popular in the 80s
that's
and early
so
90s.
That's so funny.
But it's like, yeah, name trends are everywhere.
I love that. I'm on baby name TikTok. I watch all those.
I know. Like, and it's such a funny, name trends are so fascinating because it is, you're watching the trends of people trying to pursue originality, right? So, like, everyone's trying to find a name that is unique and likable, right? Yeah. Like, they're trying to find a name that not everyone's going to have, but that is cool and likable and that they like and that they think other people
not
will
like. Adolf. Yeah. Which is what, like, some crazy people name their kids.
Yeah, but in doing that, there are, you're like, what the trends are, like, the failings of that, where you're not being original, and then everyone names their kid. Like, everyone, like, there's going to be a year where everyone's like, I bet no one will name their kid Oliver, but everyone loves the name Oliver.
That's
and then
literally
it's like,
what's happening.
No, and then it's like, there's, like, dozens and dozens of Olivers.
Yeah, that's why, like, they're like, millennials are all naming their sons Abelard. And it's like, what the fuck?
No, I know.
Well, actually, I do know an Abelard.
I bet you do.
I will never forget in, like, there was, like, a Refinery 29 article once that was, like, 25 New
Most
York-based,
fucking
like, New York-based names that, like, are really cute names inspired by New York for children. And I was, like, I remember being, like, I cannot believe this is not an Onion article. Like, one of the names was Deadass Stuyvesant. I was, like, we cannot.
If I met a kid named Stuyvesant.
It's circled back around where I'm, like, these were people's names. Yeah. These were people's names, and you could learn
about
them.
Last names, though.
Yeah, like, I know.
You could learn about them in Gilded Age.
Truly.
And that's on track to the discourse.
Wow,
but
okay.
Before we get to discourse, I do want to update, right?
We do have an update.
Last week, during our Grasshole of the Week segment, we shared the story of the goldfish that landed on the doctor's lawn in the UK and resulted in Fish Tank Twitter getting on this man's ass, right? This guy found a goldfish on his front lawn, put it in water to see if it was still alive. It was still alive. He bought a fish tank and posted about it on Twitter. Fish Tank Twitter got on his ass and were like, that fish tank needs to be 50 gallons. What the fuck is wrong with
fish
you?
Fish Tank Twitter is really crazy. Yeah. I remember really when crazy. Jenna Marbles had to do a whole apology video about a fish tank once. And I watched all of it.
Well, guys, there was a whole thing about it. There's a lot of discourse. Tim Platt pushed back. We said that all the Fish Tank Twitter were grassholes and they needed to log off and go touch grass.
But Tim Platt said no.
And Tim Platt said no, that they were right.
The original
and,
posters.
And I grassholes. Think there's somewhere, I think that there's, like, a happy medium between the two, because I do think it's like, it's, are you telling me that every fish has to be in a giant, I'm realizing in this specific moment, I have no concept of how big 50 gallons is.
It's just, it was big. The whole point is, it was very contentious.
Yeah.
And as of June 8th, Alice the Fish, quote, has passed from her injuries, is now eternally swimming in the big fish tank in the sky.
Wow. As much room as she could possibly want as up much there. As, yeah, God so bless her. And
Alice,
rest
have,
your soul.
I would have to hope it, when a fish in a tank dies and goes to heaven, they don't get put in another fish tank. Well, I would have to hope they get like the pond or the ocean.
The pond or the ocean.
Yeah. Well, an infinite ocean of love is where Alice is now.
R.I.P. Alice the Fish. Mm-hmm. Alice Goldfish / Koi Fish, depending on which fish tank person said that. Let's have a brief moment of silence for Alice.
Okay. Jake is crying, you guys.
Yeah, Jake is crying.
Jake is really upset.
So, this is a good lesson, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lesson in here about how sometimes we, the collective internet, can spend hours, days of our lives fighting with strangers over something that will literally be inconsequential a week later. Mm-hmm. And maybe that should give us all some perspective. Wow. And then the next time there's something happening on the web, maybe we'll all take a step back and breathe. But not me and Elise, because we have to make this fucking podcast.
No, so we won't.
We
you
won't.
Can. We make but, it so you can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I just want to leave space for Jake and Elise about thoughts of Alice and just, I don't even know if you knew about Alice before this, Jake.
No, I didn't know about Alice. Okay. I find this fascinating.
Wow. Well,
you know, I think that as hard as it is to go on without Alice mm-hmm. here, I think what's important is that Alice lived a life that most fish would never dream. She flew in the sky. She fell out of the sky.
Yeah.
She was
found.
Yeah,
wait. Do they have any sort of concept as to how she ended up on this man's lawn?
The theories are that, like, a bird probably picked her up out of the pond, dropped her off on his front lawn because he saw a bunch of magpies around it, birds. And,
Yeah, she lived big.
She lived big. That's
she lived bigger than any tank could ever hold her.
Well, 50 gallons with unrefined water neutralizer and all that shit.
Jesus.
So, all right.
All right.
I think we're ready to go into the discourse.
I'm glad that we set aside some time for her, though.
Important work. We're doing important work here. So, the discourse this week, in this segment, we delve into what the internet is talking about.
Okay.
So this week, we're going to get into the Bridgerton discourse.
Wow.
And there's just been a big conversation happening about Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who don't know what Bridgerton is an American-produced historical romance television series created by Chris Van Dusen for Netflix, based on the book series by Julia Quinn. It is a Shonda Rhimes first scripted show for Netflix. The series is set during the early 1800s in an alternative London Regency area. In an alternative London Regency era in which King George III established racial equality and many people of African descent to nobility due to the African heritage of his wife, Queen Charlotte. Oh. The viewer is taken to observe the highly competitive social season where young, marriageable nobility and gentry are introduced into society. So that's Bridgerton. Why do people like Bridgerton? Bridgerton's like huge online. There's all these fan cams. There's all these things. Very, very popular with a female audience. The appeal to Bridgerton is just the costumes, the hair. You see
it's
the makeup,
fun.
The music. They go to balls.
Like, they play like,
violin
versions of modern music. Everybody's sexy. The books are really popular.
There's like romantic build-up.
People are getting eaten out on the stairs.
Yeah, and like, there's like, sorry, I think it's like that period piece thing that people have always enjoyed.
I love a period piece.
People love period pieces, but then it's like modern fucking.
Yeah.
You know, you see them actually fuck.
Period drama, modern fucking.
Yeah, period drama, modern fucking. You see, you know,
I want to know how they actually fucked back then. Because it's like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, do you think it was that different? Or was like the...
Well, there's this one very famous... this one king in, I forget if it was France or England or something, or Italy, but there was this one king who had a special fuck chair.
I think that was in England.
That was in England, right? And it was kind of, it's not like a sex swing per se, but it was like, so like it was cushioned in a way so that the partner could be on all fours or something. But it was like a chaise lounge, but it was a chair. So like they're doing some freaky shit.
I know.
But yeah, but you know, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But
like, the way that they're showing again is like sensual and like a lot of eating out and a lot of stuff, which you just didn't even see in like shit made in the 90s.
I just bet sex was even nastier back then because you have to think like I feel like
everyone stinked. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that. But also like in the more that like society, there's like a monoculture and a mono society with like a lot of pressures. That like is a higher tension to then break through. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there are old paintings and shit of people being eaten out and doing all kinds of crazy
there's like
stuff.
Orgies on fucking vases. Like, yeah, yeah. I just think it was like, I think that sometimes we think the past was more prudish, but I'm like, I think we're actually more prudish now in a lot of ways.
We are, but the thing is that we are more prudish now. The thing is, like, period pieces have always been appealing to women.
Yeah.
But I think what makes Bridgerton different is that it's still, like, a fun period piece, but it has turned up the romantic intensity and also has these really hot, raunchy sex scenes geared towards women. Yeah. So that's what I mean. What is your relationship, Elise, Jacob? I'm talking like a Viscount. I'm sorry. Elise, Jake, do you watch Bridgerton? What's your thoughts?
I personally don't watch it. Mm-hmm. I think I watched like the first few episodes of season one.
Yeah.
My friends love it. Yeah. Like love it.
Yeah.
I've never been the biggest period piece person, but I think it's very pretty, and I love a lot of the actors on it. And this season, I've been watching a lot of, like, TikTok compilations of the cast being, like, very charming and fun. Like, I love Nicola. I love, there's that one, I feel like there's this one woman, I think she plays Eloise. She's, like, really funny. I've been watching a lot of clips of, like, her interviews and stuff. But I don't watch the show itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched the show itself. I watched season 3, part 1 twice. I'm eagerly awaiting part 2. I rewatched, like, all of Bridgerton to get into the new Bridgerton. I love a period piece. I actually love a slightly inaccurate period piece where they're like playing with things and making it fun. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the CW show Rain.
I remember Rain.
Yeah, Rain was about Mary, Queen of Scots, and I feel like Rain walked so Bridgerton could run. They also did the thing where they would have like a violin cover of like modern songs playing.
I do love that shit.
They did not give two shits about the costumes being right. These girls looked like they were at Coachella.
I love that.
And yeah, exactly. And it's like the time period that they were showing Mary Queen of Scots should have been like 12. She's like 17. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, her husband in real life was like 15 and just died of a fever. And this one, they're both, you know, barely 18 and fucking each other constantly. Like, it's
let's have fun. Who cares? All right. So, just the way that Bridgerton works, like, just to give you kind of a catch up to what the discourse is now.
Yeah.
So every season it's focused on the romance of a different Bridgerton sibling, which is kind of how the books are.
Yeah.
And there are 8 Bridgerton siblings.
Damn.
So season 1 was about the romance of Daphne and Simon Bassett, Duke of Hastings. There's a lot. I think it's probably the most raunchy sex.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of fucking in that one. Season 2 was about the romance of Anthony Viscount Bridgerton and Kate
Jonathan
Sharma.
Jonathan Bailey.
Jonathan
Bailey.
So handsome.
And so Kate handsome. So
and cute. And short king.
Really? I didn't realize he was short king.
He's and short then did and he, he's
wait,
gay.
Sorry. Spoiler alert for the audience. Does he die in that season?
No.
No.
Someone dies from like a bee sting on Bridgerton,
yes, he,
right?
Yes, he sees his dad die from a bee sting and that's his trauma.
Okay, cool.
And that affects him from... Yeah, basically it's just all these like, and yeah, spoiler alerts for Bridgerton, but like, again, we have to talk about it to talk about like the discourse, but it's like every season it focuses on a couple and they have things that they have to like get over to fall in love, right?
And then this season is Nicola.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the second one, you know, and again, for the first two seasons, the Bridgertons fall in love with people from different races. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they're both very thin and fit and attractive. But, you know, Regé Jean Page is black, and Kate Sharma, the woman who was played by Ashley, forgot her last name, is South Asian, she's Indian. But again, still very hot, very thin. So season three is about the romance between Colin Bridgerton and Penelope Featherington, and Penelope is played by Nicola Coughlin.
Audible's best of 2024 picks are here. Discover the year's top audiobooks, podcasts, and originals in all your favorite genres. From memoirs and sci-fi to mysteries and thrillers, Audible's curated list in every category is the best way to hear 2024's best in audio entertainment. Like a stunning new full cast production of George Orwell's 1984. Heartfelt memoirs like Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's Lovely One. The year's best fiction like The Women by Kristen Hannah. And Percival Everett's brilliantly subversive James. Audible. There's more to imagine when you listen. Go to audible.com/imagine and discover all the year's best waiting for you.
You know that feeling when your favorite brand really gets you? Deliver that feeling to your customers every time. Memorable moments like these are key to building your business and your brand. Klaviyo turns your customer data into real-time connections across AI-powered email, SMS, and more, making every moment count, so you can continue to build smarter, more meaningful relationships with your customers. Build smarter digital relationships with your customers and make every moment count with Klaviyo. Learn more at klaviyo.com/BFCM.
Nicola is 5'1", right? Mm-hmm. She's 5'1", and she has a very curvy and plump figure, which a lot of people consider her to be plus size. But the thing is, plus size refers to clothing, and plus size in the U.S. is considered to be a size 12/14. Like, that's when you go from straight sizes to plus sizes, right?
The line is 12 to 14?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, 12. I just don't think I actually knew that. Okay.
Yeah, so, and, you know, they say, like, the average woman in the U.S. is 12, is a size 12.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it starts from 12, 14, you know? The thing is that through research online, I found that she's said that she's a size 10. And it hasn't been clarified if she's a size 10 in UK, which means that if she's a 10 in UK, she's a US 6. Or if, but even if she did mean a US 10, she's still not plus size.
Yeah.
But it's because she's so short and her figure, like, she's very curvy or whatever, right?
Also,
but
if you're on screen next to everyone else being a size 0, you're...
They're like double 0. Everyone's very thin, taller, and all this stuff. She's short. She has a very curvy body. Whatever. It's, again, at the end of the day, it's representation. It's good of representation because she isn't super thin. And that's just not stuff that we've seen in Hollywood. Even her being a size 10, she does look so much more, you know, like more plus size or fat or whatever compared to the other people
on the show.
On the show, because, again, they are real thin. So what does this have to do with anything? Well, British columnist and commentator Zoe Strimpel found a huge issue with Nicola Coughlin's casting and her being like the love interest in season three. And in her article, she titled Bridgerton's Big Fantasy.
Oh, God.
And basically, exactly.
Oh, God.
So basically, the kind of thesis of her article is that fatness is like the last kind of barrier or something for intersectionality, and like Hollywood and the left is trying to get people to accept fatness, but it's bullshit and it's just not realistic. And I'll just read this excerpt, right? So basically, like, she's saying, like, they're trying to make, you know, Nicola be hot. Like, this is what she's saying before. And I'm going to read this excerpt. But reader, she's not hot. And there's no escaping it. As I was reminded recently.
She literally is.
I know, that's, I'm sorry, just to stop you immediately. Like, she literally is very, very hot and beautiful.
Let me get through the art. Let me get through the thing and then we can have our discussion. But reader, she's not hot. And there's no escaping it. As I was reminded recently, when she graced the cover of Harper's Bazaar in a fabulous outfit that still did not change her not hotness.
Oh my God.
Coughlin is an actress of great value, and she might be adored, but she is simply not possible as the friend who can catch the handsome, rich aristocrat Colin Bridgerton's eye in that way. She's not shapely, which can work as sexy even in Hollywood. She's fat. There's nothing wrong with fat. It's hardly a moral shortcoming, but a zest for equality and diversity, parentheses, and in this case, good acting, just isn't enough to make a fat girl who wins the prince remotely plausible. In the cruel visual semantics of the scream, poor plump Penelope may be set up.
Oh my God. So, okay, there's so much wrong yes. with that.
Is yes. this person fat or thin?
What do you think?
That's the thing, is I actually like waffled back and forth a couple times.
She's mid-size,
I would say. Yeah, okay. I was like,
and she's kind of ginger and like has curly hair. Like, you know, we'll get into her looks in a second. But
do we have to? I just.
I mean, we're not, you know, whatever. But I just, okay. This is because I've seen this discourse around Penelope. Penelope would never get with Colin, all this stuff. It makes me feel so crazy because Nicola Coughlin is very beautiful. You see her doing this press tour. And the guy who plays Colin is also handsome, but I don't feel like he's the most handsome prince in the world. Like, this thing that's like, they're so unevenly matched.
No, they're not.
They're not. I don't know. I feel like I'm looking at, blue that I see different from the blue that you see? Like, what's going on? These people seem like they would get together to me.
There are many arguments, right? And like, one of the arguments is like, okay, actually in the 1800s, probably somebody like Nicola would be considered like, she's hot now, but it's also like, there has always been a love for shapely women with large breasts and big eyes and all that stuff. And also, to your point, Colin, first of all, is not the prince. They're just a wealthy family. And he's the third son, babe. He ain't even the first.
Yeah.
And also, the sideburns.
They got him dressed up like a pirate. He's looking crazy.
So Elise mentioned, I don't know if
Do you watch the show?
Yes. I do watch the show. And the sideburns are a little cuckoo. And someone mentioned that the Botox
Botox is a little much.
Is tough this because he's trying to furrow his brow.
It's not furrowing.
And it's not furrowing because the Botox tough. Is a little bit too much. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, timing your Botox for the filming dates is really important.
I'm just saying it's just glass sheet on the forehead.
Yeah.
And I just don't buy this thing that they're so unbelievable as a couple. You look at them together and I'm like, I would see a couple like that out on the street.
Especially on the streets of Ireland. Yeah. There's like 5,000. First of all, I got like 18 Colin Bridgertons in my hinge.
I think what the body thing, this like drive that people have to talk about other people's bodies in terms of like hotness and attractiveness. Mm-hmm. I think that people have like an intense fear response to anything that confronts you with the reality that like sexual attraction is very individualized.
Yes.
Like we want to live in a reality where there's like a rubric that everyone exists under so that you can know like, okay, I am attracted by these standards, like, or I'm not attracted by these standards. Mm. Like this person is, so that like, and I think it goes both ways. I think it's that you want to know whether or not you want to be able to like confidently know who you would be found attracted by. Mm-hmm. And I think also it's like, if you find someone attractive, I think people really are like, I think it does suck. Like if you find someone attractive and you were into someone and then someone else is like, ew, that person's not attractive. Like that is like a bad feeling, but it shouldn't matter because you're attracted to them. Do you know what I mean? But people don't want to exist in that reality of having to stick to your own guns of your own taste and preferences.
Yeah.
So people want to live in a reality where everything exists in like objective truths.
Yes.
And so then people lose their mind when something like this like blatantly challenges that.
Well, and I mean, that is a huge conversation people have specifically about Lizzo and about a lot of people. And in this whole conversation about like what it means to like what body positivity and stuff like that. Like that rubric has always existed where, like, as long as I'm thinner than someone else, as long as my hair is longer, as long as my nose, and a lot of it is like white supremacist too, as long as my skin's lighter, as long as I'm, you know, whatever, I'll be more attractive than XYZ. Totally. And to see somebody who, again, is bigger, darker, has kinkier hair or whatever than you, like, or you know what I mean? Then, like, it does. It rocks people to the core. It makes them uncomfortable because then it's like, well, what have I been fighting for? What have I been, like, stressing and not eating, you know, and having struggling with my body and all that stuff? Like, if this person, like, no, that's not right. And like, vice versa, too, with, like, and it's also, like, on the other end, it's like, well, I like this person, but I know I'll be made fun of by my friend. It's kind of like, I mean, the whole premise of that.
It's also so crazy to have these critiques about a television show where you just said the premise of which is that the king solved racism with one decision.
Exactly.
Like, like in this reality, they literally were like, and no more racism, and then there isn't any. I mean, and like,
literally, and like, again, they're playing like Lord on the violin.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
People are wearing like crazy.
Inaccurate,
it's just like, like, why are you digging your heels in on that? A girl who's a size 10 can't get a boyfriend.
It's also just so fucking annoying that, like, it's just so fucking annoying that it has to be a conversation at all. Like, I don't want to talk about Nicola Coughlan's body. I actually don't give a fuck. I think she's so funny and enjoyable.
Yeah.
I don't have a need to talk about her body because I don't really have much to say about it because it's like...
Well, you have a life, Jake.
Yeah. I just, like, it's so fucking annoying that
You're a content creator.
I'm a content creator talking on a podcast about a woman's body. I actually want to die. No, like, but it's like...
I know. So we can talk about men's bodies,
No, but it's just like, I just think it's so fucking annoying.
Exactly.
Like, I'm like, why, like... It's like you, it's just so, you, like, the person that wrote this article, it's like, you think this is an interesting take?
Well.
Shut up. Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
It is, like, literally, I'm realizing, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the premise of the podcast. The show is called Go Touch Grass. I'm like, go touch grass,
exactly.
Bitch. Like, that's so fucking stupid. Like.
It really
is.
Going
to be grasshole, but
do you really think writing that article is going to get you laid? What's the goal here, babe?
Well, let's talk about the backlash. So, again. Everything that we said, you know, the internet had much to say about it, right? Naturally, a lot of people were pissed as hell about this, stating that, again, despite Nicola's size, which I must reiterate, it's technically not plus size, it's beautiful, or, you know, it is realistic, like you were saying. And again, to echo something that Jake said, fellow journalist Anne Marie Tomchak shared an article for the Irish Independent writing, "So much for progress. Body shaming woman is well and truly alive in the smartphone era. This week it's Nicola Coughlin.
Coughlin.
I think it's Coughlin. Coughlin.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's, you know, the people. Irish. They like. To play their little games.
Yeah. I'll go yell at. Listen, we're by the portal. I'm gonna go.
Yeah, we're gonna go to the portal and say, hey. You're putting H's.
Wait, where is the portal?
Oh, the portal's right two the blocks corner. Away, baby. We'll go to the portal.
Is the portal at Madison Square Park?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You can see the portal as soon as we're done.
That's so interesting.
This week it's Nicola Coughlin. Mm-hmm. Next week it'll be someone else. It's not harmless. It has lasting impact and it's all holding us back. People were then calling out what Zoe looks like, which again, Zoe isn't exactly thin or fair skinned or anything that she would consider desirable by her standards. But then people started looking into Zoe and her writing and found that she's leaning a little right.
Mm.
And she's written things like, quote, "The burkini is a sign of religious oppression and not a fashion statement."
Jesus.
And actually...
Imagine, again, it's like, why do you give a fuck about Nicola Coughlin's body? Why do you give a fuck about the burkini? Like, what is going on with you?
Well, what's going on is she's someone who considers herself a huge Zionist and is upset at Nicola because for the most part, at the height of Nicola's Bridgerton fame, Nicola's used her platform to bring visibility to the genocide that's happening in Gaza right now. And she has raised over $1.2 million for aid in Gaza.
Yeah, I feel like she's one of the most vocal.
Yeah, well, she, like her father, like, worked in, like, her father like worked in something where he was like involved in the college. Like, she grew up like dealing with this her whole life. So like, yes. It's quite personal to her.
And also Irish people have like
That as well. But on top of that, like her father, I don't remember what his role was, but like, yeah.
Yeah. So she feels very strong that she has been using her platform to speak out. So like, in contrast, Zoe has used her platform of 4,000 followers on Twitter to say, quote, in response to Nicola's raising $1 million, quote, also, there is no Palestine, she put Palestine in quote, and never was, as imagined in the minds of those who would wish Israel be wiped off the face of the earth. So basically what people have uncovered is not only is this woman self-hating, she's not that attractive and all that stuff. It's like she can't criticize Nicola for her beliefs.
Yeah. So she's finding this other thing
and doubling down on it.
Wow. So she's got like, it's like a many layers of ulterior motives and psychosis that's going into her publishing this article where it's like, it's honestly sad that the self-hating part is just sad because I feel like it reflects this idea of like, it is challenging her to be like, oh, if this girl can get the guy, then why haven't I, if I've been trying to subscribe to this and that? Like, that's very sad. But then the other stuff, it seems like, oh, and also I hate her for this reason, so I'm going to write this really nasty article because I can't write what I would actually say in an article.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's so interesting to think about, because I think I oftentimes will just see a headline like that. That's something that's like very clickbaity like that. Yeah. And I just assume the goal of it was to be that clickbait. And so it's interesting to look deeper and be like, oh no, there's also like a personal ulterior motive there that maybe drove them.
Well, the fucked up thing about it is that you cannot read the original article unless you do pay the paywall. And I try, and I have like websites that I go on to like break through the paywall. And they won't work on it. Like, this is, like, one of the websites that you can't even
read it. Ironclad paywall.
Like, ironclad paywall. And it's, like, I mean, I literally had to dig through Reddit, TikTok, whatever, to try to find excerpts of this. I found the fucking excerpts on this article on, like, so embarrassing, Threads, of all places. And
Threads will do. The thing is, though, if discourse is discoursing and people are yelling at each other, you will find it on Threads.
Yeah. Threads, people are yelling.
The closer
on
you get
Threads.
To Facebook, the closer you get to people yelling.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Like, the meta-owned one
and
is going to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's just this ironclad paywall. So it's like, it is like clickbaity, but it's also just like, again, and people are saying this about like media literacy. Like, I saw this like TikTok that was like, people complaining, like, why didn't they teach us media literacy in school? And it's like, that's English class.
Yeah.
Like, that is like, that is why when people are like, sometimes the blue sweater is just blue, like that kind of discourse is like, no. When you have literary analysis and all of that, it is for the purpose of like, what was the author trying to say? Who is the author?
Yeah.
What is their point of view? Where is this coming from? All this stuff.
And who published this? Who published what is it trying to convey? It, like, I remember someone else, I think it was Sarah Levine, who is at Katie Kirk Media now, but she used to be my editor at Betches. She posted something that was like, yeah, like piggybacking off that point, if you did AP classes and you had to do like the document based question, where you would have to like the DBQ, I know it like sends a shiver down my spine, but you would have to like read a bunch of primary source documents and then answer a question based on that. That's also media literacy because it's like you're reading these things and you're trying to determine, oh, well, this was like a pro. This is coming from like a pro-military source. So what's it trying to convey? Whereas this is a regular article. So what's it trying to convey? Like all of that was media literacy.
Yeah. But, you know, people are dumb. But the thing is like, so.
Not only are, but it's not just like people are dumb. It's also that people are consciously stripping away the context of things to eliminate media literacy.
Yeah. Well,
so then you have to, as like the individual, raise your skills of media literacy to ask questions, like ask the right questions when you see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's like, I get what you're trying to say. And it's like, yes, you see the headline of like, Nicola's ugly or she's fat.
Sure,
and it's
whatever.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, fuck you. No, she's not. You're an ugly bitch, whatever. And it's like, fine. But it's like, who is this woman? Let's look into her thing. This and that. Oh, actually, everything that she does is pro a lot of crazy fucked up shit, you know? Right. Like,
This person has an agenda that is visible if you go and look at what their other posts are and about.
So, then we got the backlash to the backlash. Oh,
this is the place where it always goes.
It always goes to the backlash to the backlash, right? So, again, to start, to summarize, right? Nicola's season 3 star, Bridgerton. This woman writes an article saying Nicola's fat and ugly and not believable. People are like, what the fuck are you talking about? First of all, you're not that cute. And second of all, she's beautiful. And third of all, you're a Zionist. Mm-hmm. So backlash to the backlash. Zoe writes an article.
Oh, God.
She said, it's titled, "My Week from Hell Taught Me What Upsets the Woke."
Oh, God.
And frankly, this is only 4 paragraphs, so I'm just going to read the whole article.
Okay.
We're calling 4 paragraphs an article?
Yeah.
Barely, bitch.
I'm like, that's a notes app.
That's a notes app.
It's a MySpace bulletin.
It's a MySpace bulletin. I write texts longer than this. Okay. Last week, I had a big reminder of the sheer sadistic horror of the Madden woke. I wrote an article stating that the casting of a proudly overweight actress, Nicola Coughlan, as a romantic lead in the latest Bridgerton series was the most interesting foray the Netflix blockbuster has yet made into diversity. In casting a fat actress in that role, the program, with an E because she's British, was asking us to believe that she would finally catch the eye of her prince, the aristocratic Colin Bridgerton, parentheses Luke Newton.
But he's not a prince.
I guess that's why she said her prince. I wrote that this was not plausible for good or ill because of the world we live in, parentheses, this isn't rocket science. And yet the article spawned personalized abuse, including hundreds of people going through my online photos and writing about how hideous I am. I'm still on the receiving end of this vile torrent. I've marveled at the sheer crudeness of the insult, a disgusting tone and style, parentheses, swears, threats, scathing, hectoring, taunting, that takes the breath away and makes one despair about the future. For if this is what the internet generation are like, what hope? It's like they're barely human. The deluge of excreta has shown several things.
Of what?
Excreta.
Excreta?
Excreta.
I'm Googling that.
I've never heard excreta.
What
let
does
us
it say?
Know. Let us know.
Wait, Jake, what does it say? Jake's Googling it now.
Excreta. Waste matter discharged from the body, especially feces and urine.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I've heard excrement.
Yeah, excrement.
But excreta, I've never
heard. Excreta. This deluge of excreta has shown several things. One is the rise of the total inability to separate out culture from personal offense. These people don't seem to grasp that a huge blockbuster for Netflix is entirely fair game for criticism. Coughlin is a seemingly wealthy star with a terrifying fan base.
Terrifying.
Oh my God.
While her troll warriors molder in their basements writing expletive laden insults to me, yet to them she is the victim.
Oh,
it is clear that all sense of scale, not to mention civility, is dead, and that the people's language abilities have been seriously degraded by a decade on social media.
Yeah, not all of us can be saying deluge of excreta.
That is crazy.
The last, we got one more or 2 more sentences. The big takeaway, though, is that those who shout loudest on behalf of inclusivity and moral virtue, be it anti-racism, Palestine, or fat rights, are amongst the most aggressive, most anti-virtuous, and least humane people of all. What say
womp,
you?
Womp.
Guys, because to me, this sounds like she fucked around and she found out.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, hey, it's just crazy. I want to hear your thoughts.
It's so funny to me to be like, to write an article that is basically, this girl's too fat to be the star of the show, and then be like, where has civility gone?
I know.
Where is kindness? Why am I being subjected to such cruelty? It's like, because you wrote something fucking mean.
Yeah. Well, people don't understand that, like, it's like, people don't understand that the internet has changed things now, where I think people think of celebrities as this, like, echelon of people, and that because they're of a certain level of visibility that they're allowed to be talked about in a way that you wouldn't talk about any other person. But it's like, no, the internet has made that true of everyone. So mm-hmm. if you're going to step out and talk shit, you are now signing up for the same, because you're just as visible as they are. Yeah, like, in certain regards. Like, I can look you up the same way I can look her up. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so it's, I feel like people don't get that. I'm like, and I'm not saying it in, like, a threatening way, but it's like, if you're going to sign up to talk shit on the internet, people are going to find you. People are going to have something
to say. And people are going to talk shit back.
Yeah.
And I think that is what people aren't used to. Again, we have moved from this age of, you know, people like Perez Hilton and all kinds of shit were saying things about Britney Spears and how, like, cuckoo, all the, I mean, not that long ago, but, like, all these things about women's bodies and all that stuff. Yeah. And, like, to no pushback or to no thing. And, like, everyone would just accept it and then take in these harmful stereotypes and, again, walk around with these rubrics of all this bullshit again, right? But, like, as we as society have disrupted that, then these people still stay on that path of, like, well, I'm going to talk about this woman's body. And, like, how dare, you know, but they're not expecting for people to, like, have any kind of pushback or anything. And it's like, yeah, if you think a Netflix star is fair game for criticism, like, go ahead and say whatever you want. You can say whatever you want about anyone, but you will have consequences. Yeah. And it's like, if you're talking about how fat and ugly she is, then talk about, then don't get mad when people talk about how fat and ugly you are.
Because it's not even just that she said she's fat. She said she's not hot, specifically. Yes. Which, like, are actually two different things. Yeah. And, like, and so it's just funny that her argument is like, well, I'm talking about a show. It's fair game. And it's like, okay, well, they're talking about an article. It's fair game. Like, like, everything she's hiding behind is bullshit.
Yeah.
And I just think, to me, it reminded me a little bit of that Jordan Peterson drama a few years ago, where he talked about, like, how ugly the Sports Illustrated plus size swimsuit model was. Mm-hmm. And he's like, can you believe that people want us to think this is attractive? And people called him out and were like, you're ugly. And also, who cares? Like, people do think she's hot. Like, if you don't, that's fine. But, like, you're not an objective truth teller.
Yeah.
And he was like, ugh, I'm so offended. And it's like, what are you offended about? You know, I mean, this whole woke conversation.
I would just be so curious to talk to her about what she thought she was achieving in writing the article. Because it's like, do you think you're, it's like, from my perspective, you're upholding a system that is oppressing you, I would imagine. Well, right? So it's like, what is the goal here? Because, like, it's like, in putting her down or claiming that this is unrealistic, like, are you, like, yeah, like, what is it that you wanted to achieve on a personal level? I just don't understand that.
It's also interesting because it is acknowledged in the show. The point, the whole Penelope character, she is considered a wallflower. She's considered, like, a quote-unquote spinster because she's been on the marriage market for too long, and then she has a glow-up. And also, the point is that she and Colin have this long-standing relationship that is based on, like, being physically attracted to each other, but also a long history. So it's not just like the show isn't even addressing that her body looks different too. It's like actually an integral part of the plot of what's going on. So her entire premise that the show is just trying to, like, wave it past is actually not even true as well.
And to that point again, like, they have this friendship and she's, like, supporting and loyal of him and stuff, and then somebody teases him and is like, oh, are you gonna, like, what's up with you and her? And he's like, I would never date her. Like, the same shit of, like, even though you may, like, be attracted to someone, it's like, what does society say about that? He kind of teases her and she overhears it and she's like, well, fuck you, I'm not talking to you anymore. And he's, like, upset, like, why are you ignoring me? Like, we're friends, you never wrote me back and all that stuff. And then he starts again realizing it's like this slow brew love that's, like, been burning over time, and it realizes, like, oh, I actually do like this girl and all this stuff. So it's like, again, to your point, it's not ignoring it, and it's also showing again that a big part of their attraction is deeper than just physical stuff.
Yeah.
It is like...
He does finger her in that carriage.
He does finger her, and then immediately...
the hell out of her in that carriage.
He fingers her and then...
proposes immediately.
And I'm like, come on.
So is the second half of the season going to be their love story as well, or is it a new love story for the second half?
It's their love story as well, because now there's... again, Bridgerton spoilers, but now there's drama because she's Lady Whistledown. She writes all the...
Which is still a plot point that's going on in season...
still a plot point. Yeah. He doesn't know she's Lady Whistledown. Eloise knows she's Lady Whistledown.
She's talked a lot of shit about him.
His
and
family. About,
and his family and stuff like that in the things. So basically, it's like, are they actually going to get married if he finds out that she's...
Got it.
Lady Whistledown. And also, is she going to still do it?
Is she going to still be Lady... We'll find out.
We'll find out.
I think it drops this weekend, so I'm excited.
Oh, wow. That's a quick back-to-back.
Well,
did they split it up because of the strikes?
No, they split
I think they split it up to get a bunch
of get more views.
Sure,
Gotcha. More like they were. It was ready 2 years ago. They just did it to be.
Gotcha. They want to make us wait.
Yeah. But yeah, that's our discourse. So, and also, I just want to say again with that last, the last sentence was a tell. She's just like, you guys aren't human. Be it anti-racist. Palestine and anti-fat, and it's like, okay, girl, like, you just, you know, it's the same thing. I don't know. I just remember when I was bamboozled once and I went on a Hinge date with a Trump supporter on accident.
Damn.
And I was like, listen, if I knew you voted for Trump, I would never have gone on a date with you. And he tried to say that I was ignorant. It's like, well, you're the ignorant one. You're the one that's this and that. You're the one that's a bigot. You're the one. That's their number one thing. And it's like, well, a lot of your principles and views are based on not being inclusive, like this rigid, small thing. And like, it's ultimately my choice to, like, you know, push back on that or even say, like, you can believe whatever you want, but you are
going to
get,
go on a date with you.
I don't have to go on a date with you, but also it's like, I don't have to support you, or I can tell you, like, hey, it's not cancel culture to be like, hey, I don't agree with you and you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also just so funny to me to post something that you know is going to be inflammatory. It's this game that, like, conservative commentators always play, and that actually brings us very nicely into our grass hole, where you say something you know is going to be inflammatory, and then you go, oh, well, I guess I activated the woke mob again, and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to run us right into our grass hole of the week, I think.
Okay.
Grass hole of the week, Jake, is our segment where we name someone who needs to log off the most. They
simply
must get offline.
And it's not this girl we just talked about?
No, Jesus. I know. She is a great candidate.
We had to talk about the fish people.
Yeah.
Fish tank Twitter was doing too much.
Word.
She certainly needs to log off as well.
Okay. But I saw... Yeah, when I saw the, like, it was my week from hell.
Yeah.
Like, as if she was, like...
Log the fuck off. Yeah. Okay, wait, so let's get into this.
Log the fuck off. So this week's grass hole is someone who, you know, I'm surprised they haven't been grass hole before.
I'm surprised, too.
We are talking about conservative commentator Matt Walsh.
Not of UCB.
Yeah. He's not the founder of UCB. Has nothing to do with that Matt Walsh.
Never
this is
been
a different...
on Veep.
No, this is a completely different Matt Walsh, who is like a Daily Wire host.
Thank God. Nice. Okay, great.
He's got like 2.8 million followers on X, because when he uses it, it is X.
Yes.
Because when things are fun happening on there,
it's Twitter.
It's X. 100%. So what's happening, what we're talking about today, is taking place on X.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But before we get into it, I do have to ask you guys, what do you know about the children's entertainer known as Miss Rachel?
Zero. Literally never heard of her.
I've heard some murmurs.
Can I Google?
You can absolutely pull up a picture.
Want to see if I love a visual. I'm a big visual person.
She's a sweet little white lady, I would say.
Oh, I've like visually. Never seen this person before.
Wow, that's crazy because I don't have kids, but I do. Miss Rachel comes into my purview sometimes.
Okay.
So Miss Rachel is a kids' social media creator whose series Songs for Littles is like very, 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 very popular with little kids. It's a series that's focused on language development for toddlers and infants.
Okay.
So it's for really little kids.
Okay.
And my understanding, because I have like friends who have kids and stuff, is that you can like put your kid in front of Miss Rachel. She's got a YouTube
page. And they'll just like...
Yeah, and
it's
they're
like cocoa melons, the other pocket.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. They're locked in. She's got whatever that formula is where you can lock a kid in. She's got it. Totally. She's super popular on TikTok, YouTube. She started in the pandemic. She's got over 9 million subscribers on YouTube.
Good for her.
At this
She's making
point.
Some fucking money.
She's making some fucking money. And the whole thing is
Matt Walsh is mad at her. Wait, I'm so excited.
Matt Walsh is mad at her. So her whole thing is inspired by like her son had an early childhood like speech therapist.
Okay.
And so I guess she incorporates some of the things she learned for speech development.
Okay,
into
cool.
The song.
Great.
So
she's a huge evil bitch.
Apparently. Yeah. So, and again,
mad I can't at wait. Her. Yeah, I can't wait.
So far, hate her. Sounds evil.
Yeah. Okay. So on June 1st, Miss Rachel posted a 25-second video to celebrate Pride Month. She says in the video, "Happy Pride to all our wonderful families and friends. This month and every month, I celebrate you. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're exactly who you are." Can you tell why people are getting mad now? God. Can you guess? The post got 120,000 likes on Instagram, 393,000 likes on TikTok, and conservatives got pissed off. A bunch of right-wing people flipped out. But the biggest flip out was from conservative commentator / Daily Wire host Matt Walsh, yeah, whose ex-bio says, "Theoretic fascist." Best-selling children's author, America's highest legal authority. Uh-huh. So he thinks he's like very funny, and also he's psycho. If you actually go to his page today, while I was doing research, what he's mad about today is that a fat woman won Miss Alabama. So
I mean, come on, guys.
No, again, just,
come on,
again,
guys.
The discourses like, are all eating themselves today.
Yes, and
Jesus
I'm like,
Christ,
sorry, a woman in the 1800s is hot. A fat woman wins Miss Alabama. Guys, do we hear ourselves? Do we hear ourselves?
It's literally crazy. It's like him being mad about that, and then like Jesus retweeting libs of TikTok Christ. Being mad about it. So if you go to his page today, that's what he's on about. But if you went there a week ago, he was on about this.
Okay.
Some other background that's very important that adds fuel to this fire is that Miss Rachel also recently left a comment on Dylan Mulvaney's page asking her to come on her show. And yeah, you know, Dylan Mulvaney turns these like conservative people into just like
I know it's
they
insane
make, like they're like heads spin around just thinking about her and she regularly features
Dylan Mulvaney has got Kid Rock to shoot like AK-47 mm-hmm. into like a big multi-pack of Bud Lights.
Yes.
Like, that is what Dylan Mulvaney... So
she sends them into a crazy rage because... just literally... And that was all because Dylan Mulvaney received a singular Bud Light can that was specialized to her. Those weren't for sale anywhere. They were... She just received...
And they
received
did, like, content creation.
She was gonna, I think, do some videos, but
She did, like, one video.
Yeah,
like
where she showed the can and people went crazy and Kid Rock
like,
shot up a...
Kid Rock should have been... I'm sorry. Kid Rock should have been prosecuted for that. I was like, this is a death threat. That's not acceptable.
I know.
No, yeah. I literally... I like, that... It makes me so upset. I find it so upsetting.
To shoot beer can... Yeah, no, it is upsetting.
Yeah. And to say, like, this is the appropriate reaction to someone receiving a single novelty beer can. It's madness. So Miss Rachel also has like a non-binary singer friend on the show named Jules Hoffman. So that also Great. Factors into this. And my understanding, as far as I can tell, other than the fact that Jules is introduced with they, them pronouns, Jules just also sings songs about like shapes and stuff. Like literally they're just also singing children's songs.
Yeah.
So, after she posted the June 1st video, Matt Walsh tweeted, "Miss Rachel is an extremely popular YouTuber who makes content for babies and toddlers. She just posted a video celebrating Pride Month. This is a message to conservative parents. She doesn't want your business. You should respond accordingly." Then, 2 days later, he posted a 15-part thread about Miss Rachel.
Okay.
He uses a bunch of transphobic language in the thread.
Of course
he does. Just letting you guys know. So, one, a day after Miss Rachel told her audience she didn't care if they opposed her Pride post, because Miss Rachel did come out and say, like, yeah, I posted about Pride because I do support that. So if you don't,
like,
then I'm
kick
sorry.
Rocks, yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Her sidekick, a they-them named Jules, performed at the Queer Fam Pride Jam. The event was advertised as family friendly. It wasn't. And then he just attached a picture of like a drag queen, but like the drag queen is just like standing there. Like you can kind of tell she's dancing, but like
it's so crazy. Like I find it like exhausting to talk about, but it's like it is like a drag queen could in like fully like full bodysuit, not a single lick of skin showing, and they'll be like it wasn't family friendly, like it was so inappropriate. It's like, what are you talking about? I know that they've seen so much worse at the fucking fair you took them to. Like, it's crazy. Absolutely.
But it's not, yeah, it's not about the, it's just about the idea of seeing someone dress up in a different way. It's really ridiculous.
On Sunday, the city of Chicago, along with several corporate partners, including Lululemon, of course, partnered with the event, which put out these marketing materials to encourage kids to come. I'm going to show you the offensive marketing materials.
Oh, my God.
It's literally just a graphic that says Queer Fam Pride Jam in rainbow colors.
Okay.
And then there's like a nice picture of the organizers, and some of them are in drag and some of them are not.
I mean.
And some of the drag is like literally it's like a superhero. So
it's so stupid.
It's unbelievable. It featured Jules, who identifies as a white non-binary trans mask human, and claims that as a 2-year-old, he's misgendering this person. They realized something's not right with their body. At 12, a teacher exposed them to gender ideology. Following Jules' performance of a song about crabs, caterpillars, and butterflies. The children were subjected to a grown man in a skin-tight leopard print onesie with heels, shaking his body all around while collecting dollar bills from a small child. The children were then trained in the gay Vogue dance style by a grown man.
They said that like it was the dark arts.
I know, like really. And then they learned the unforgivable curses.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's so funny.
Learning to strut and shimmy. Voguing is linked to effeminate men, okay, and gay ballroom, where older LGBTQ identifying individuals act as mother and father to misguided young members.
Okay, so someone watched Pose.
Someone watched Pose.
Someone watched literally all of Pose. Yeah. Wait, that's so funny, crazy.
Is there more?
Oh, yes. Is this the happy pride Miss Rachel was talking about? Celebrating the exposure of children to grown men with fetishes and a penchant for sharing them with little kids? Jules, and perhaps even Miss Rachel herself, believes the idea of representation. Whether they include an overt lesson on gender ideology in your children's content or not, Jules's ambiguous physical presentation in the show is the point.
Okay.
So the fact that Jules just...
Okay. I'm like, not well.
Is gender neutral looking is the point.
And this dude like will take his kids like a football game where men are literally beating the shit out of each other, and then cheerleaders come out and like do a full sexual like...
Yeah. Right. Yeah, like, would they watch the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders? So is that inappropriate for children?
Yeah. Well, no, that's American. So that's fine.
No, it's fine.
And also, you know, before you keep going... There's a whole other, I mean, we could have made the podcast about this, but there's a whole other discourse online every year, like clockwork, about if gay pride is family friendly and like it being about, you know, too sexualized and all this stuff, whatever. So it's really interesting that there is actually like, there finally is this thing that's going to quell all that bullshit of like, well, I can't bring my kids to Pride. And it's like, well, here's a family friendly Pride event.
Here's the Queer Fam Pride Jam.
Yeah.
And the thing is
so insane.
And the thing is that people are still bitching about it. And it's like, it's just like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Like, these people don't care about, like, if it's family friendly or not. Like, you don't want this to exist at all.
At
you don't
all.
Want these people to exist at all. It's the same thing of like, again, I find parallels to like the angry black woman stereotype of like, oh, well, I don't want to be like, I don't want to get too mad because then they're going to say angry. The thing is, anyone who's going to think that of you is going to think that no matter what.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really fucking matter.
Again, Jules sung a song by Matt Walsh's own admission about crabs, caterpillars, and butterflies.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, they're non-binary. Who fucking cares? But the thing is, with these people, these conservatives are the same people who are like, you can't tell me what to do with my kids. I'm not going to vaccinate them.
I know.
I'm unschooling them.
I'm unschooling them. And like things that are detrimental, it is worse for your children to not be vaccinated and not to do these things, you know, versus like
seeing Jules sing a song about caterpillars.
See a non-binary people sing a song about crabs.
It's so
or
crazy.
A drag queen in a leopard print onesie.
Learning to Vogue.
But these people, whatever. But at the end of the day, isn't it? Aren't you like all these parent rights shit? Like where you're like, I should be able to do whatever I want with my kids.
Yeah, but that only means like you should be able to give them a gun.
Yeah.
So this is how he ends the thread. Jules believes that their representation, aka being Miss Rachel's songs for littles, helps to encourage and nurture a sense of curiosity in kids and teaches them that they are infinite in ways to exist in the, that there are infinite ways to exist in the world and one isn't better than the other. And then he attaches a quote from Jules.
Is there something wrong with
him? Like, literally. Something. So then he attaches a quote from Jules. Jake, do you want to read the offensive quote from Jules?
He branded this as an offensive quote.
This is what he attaches as like part of her gender, their like, gender ideology.
Jake's like fucking dying.
I don't want. It's just so funny to say that this is bad. I don't want kids to grow up feeling that they have to pretend to be something they are not to feel safe in this world.
Wow. Monster.
No, monstrous.
Monstrous.
Monstrous. Offensive to the children. Teaching them how to strut and dance. Teaching them about caterpillars.
This is really crazy.
Except we know this isn't true. Telling a child they can identify as the opposite sex and putting them on a pathway to sterilization and mutilization is worse than teaching them to embrace who they are, the sex they were born. When Jules created music for Power to the Queer Children, which donated 100% of the proceeds to the Trevor Project, did she consider children's Christ. Well-being? He's coming for the Trevor Project now. This is the same Trevor Project that, according to the New York Post... Hosted chat rooms where minors talk with adults about graphic sexual fetishes and masturbation. It currently supports the sterilization and mutilization of minors known as gender affirming care.
As someone who used to volunteer for the Trevor Project, those chat rooms are suicide prevention. Yeah. Like, I'm losing my fucking mind.
But also, like, sir, are we going to really talk about people with minors on chat rooms? Because like, that's not a
Matt
gay Wall, problem.
Matt
that's,
Gates would have something to say
yeah,
about
Matt
that.
Yeah, Matt Gates will have something to say about minors and chat rooms.
Is Miss Rachel promoting Jules to encourage more young children to identify as non-binary? It seems that way. That would explain why she personally invited Dylan Mulvaney, an adult man who's pretending he's a girl. Again,
Jesus.
This is his transphobic language.
Jesus
to participate
Christ.
In one of her videos. Miss Rachel's Songs for Little videos are billed as educational content for kids and toddlers. They include renditions of nursery rhymes like Wheels on the Bus. What would Miss Rachel want Dylan Mulvaney to say to kids and toddlers exactly? Maybe she would want Dylan Mulvaney to also sing Wheels on the Bus. Jules may be excited to hang out with you and your littles, but they will certainly not be coming anywhere near mine. Okay. And then the final part is, here are my full thoughts. So that wasn't his full thought.
You have to be joking. You
he then
have
links,
to be joking.
He links to a YouTube video that is 21 minutes
I
long.
I would rather die.
Remember that the inciting post was 25 seconds long from Miss Rachel.
Yeah, but like, this is their part of their clickbait game. It's like, he has no content. And I mean, in many ways, is it our game? But it's like, he has no content. If Miss Rachel isn't posting content, you know? And I'm like,
if Miss Rachel hadn't said Happy Pride, he would have had nothing. He would have had to wait for that fat girl to win Miss Alabama.
I know.
So wild.
21 minutes of thoughts after a 15-part thread about a less than 30-second video in which a children's creator just wished someone a Happy Pride.
And this is why I don't want to ever call myself a content creator because this is, it's like,
Sorry.
I'm just bringing it, it's like, because you are creating something that doesn't exist. You are making this an issue that doesn't exist. Mm. You are like adding layers of like, of intent and causation and consequence that fundamentally do not exist from this 25-second video. You are claiming that there are intentions there that don't exist. You are claiming there are ramifications there that don't exist. You are claiming that it is a symptom of problems that don't exist.
Yeah. Miss Rachel probably has among her 9 million followers gay families, people with, you know, queer parents, and that's why she's wishing them a happy pride. If that's not you,
it's
just move it right along. It's a 25-second video. Why? Again, it's just so funny to be mad at Miss Rachel.
But it's also like, find a conservative, like,
find
that talks about, like, guns and whatever to your fucking babies then and get indoctrinated
right.
with
I
that
I guess,
bullshit.
Yeah, find a conservative version of Miss Rachel.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a market out there, but it's probably
back. I mean, that's very scary to think
there's
about.
There's VeggieTales.
Yeah. Actually, VeggieTales did slap, though. I loved VeggieTales. Wow. VeggieTales was good.
Christian propaganda.
The Grapes of Wrath song. They did a whole thing. It's fun. The bunny.
Any thoughts about this? I really want to move on. Any thoughts about final thoughts?
I hope this guy chokes. Fuck him.
And that's why we say Matt Walsh. Go touch grass.
Go touch grass.
I know.
Wow, that was a chock full episode.
Yeah, a smorgasbord, of people who absolutely have to log off.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely have to. But for our fans who are logged in,
mm-hmm.
Jake, where can they find you and watch your incredible content that you're creating?
You can follow me on TikTok or Instagram at Jake W. Cornell.
Leave that little boy alone.
I am performing at Joe's Pub July 8th and 9th if you're in New York. And then I am touring all over America July, August, and September.
Tour.
If you want to come see me live wherever you are, please check my website, jakecornell.com, to come see me live. Love you.
There's a lot of great dates and Jake's amazing live.
Yeah. You guys got to go.
He's so fucking funny.
It's a final time.
And for everyone who's logged in, you can find us at Go Touch Grass Pod on everything. You can find me at Pandalise on Instagram and at Elise Navidad on TikTok.
You can follow me at Millie_Tamaris on Instagram and on TikTok and on Twitter at Millie Tamaris. Yes, I'm still there for some reason.
Hell yeah.
Someone's got to see this stuff.
Someone's got to see all of this stuff.
And when Millie uses it, it's Twitter.
When Millie uses it, it's Twitter.
She's not using X. X is for this other stuff.
Yes.
Excreta.
Oh, God.
Dilution of excreta. Until then, guys, go touch grass.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.